NFL.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to continue the conversations that we've started over the last few days, though there is a new feature on NFL.com that we're going to introduce into the dialogue, and that is the fact that they have gone around and made bold predictions, Paul, for every single team in the NFC.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Over the last several months, we have discussed many of the aspects of what the Giants may be doing this year, and some surprises, some things we think will be consistent, some things we think will be better. But the bold predictions thing, that may be just a little bit off the radar, so we're going to take a shot.
And Paul's been thinking very hard. He has one on offense. He has one on defense, so stay tuned for that. To watch the remainder of the program, you can head on over to Giants.com. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets. And one of the things that we had discussed in great length yesterday was the fact of how the NFC East will play out, whether or not any punishments will have an impact on how the season plays out. But I think it's also interesting when you take into consideration the outlook of the division, if things go right for each and every individual team, that's where these bold predictions come into play, Paul.
So sure.
Let's start with the Giants. In an ideal world, and the one that they chose for NFL.com, I think we could use as our starting point, is Evan Engram. If everything goes according to plan and he exceeds or at least meets expectations, they're saying they don't think it's a stretch for him to become the first rookie tight end to make the Pro Bowl since 2002.
You know, I could certainly see that happening. I think you and I both discussed the parameters of this question. What is a bold prediction? How far off the path does it have to be? How much of a long shot does it have to be to qualify as a true bold prediction? I don't know. There are an awful lot of people who think he's going to have a spectacular rookie season. And given the state of the tight ends right now in the NFC, I don't know. Is that a real, real long shot or just a little bit of a long shot?
Well, the writer, Elliot Harrison, he brings up the point that you just alluded to. The reason why he feels good about that prediction being bold is because he looks at the NFC landscape at tight ends, and he points to there's a class of elite guys still, but then he thinks there's a significant drop-off where perhaps Evan Engram can sneak in. So here's the thing. If you're making the case that there's a drop-off, then how bold of a prediction is it truly? Because you think that since there's not a lot of competition, this is the ideal year for Engram in his rookie campaign to make
Hence
some noise.
My point.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly what I was piggybacking upon, the fact that I don't know truly how bold it is. And I slightly disagree, because I think if you look at the NFC, Paul, I actually see a lot of depth at tight end. He didn't even name some of the guys that I would throw into the conversation.
Well, I think what comes into play is the fact that, you know, the Giants have not exactly had superstars at tight end for several years.
Which is fair.
And now that Coach McAdoo, who likes to use the tight end in a West Coast attack, is going to have this tremendous talent suddenly dropped into his lap, I think there's a lot of expectation that he's going to feature this tight end a lot, because now he's finally gotten to quench that thirst, to have that weapon that he has so badly wanted to have. So I absolutely understand why some people think that Ingram's tight end numbers are going to be off the charts. I understand it. And again, that's kind of why I don't know that it's a huge long shot.
Because of the chatter and everything
yeah.
that has been surrounding him following the draft. If you just look at the NFC, though, overall, I mean, Jason Witten's still there. So that's somebody that's always in the conversation. He hasn't been putting up monster numbers,
except
but he's in the conversation.
He is what he is, and yeah. he's a Hall of Famer, and he's still a terrific player. But in terms of pure stats, you know, I hate to do this, and I know you don't go for it either, but in this particular instance, you have to address the fantasy football factor.
Oh, of course.
Because
yeah.
those are the guys who put up the stats, the fantasy football numbers at tight end, who are probably going to go to the Pro Bowl. Jason Witten is no longer a fantasy football tight end.
Correct. He's not putting up the monster numbers, but part of also the Pro Bowl is popularity amongst the players, the status of where that player is. Also, we see guys get sent to the Pro Bowl if that is indeed their last hurrah at the height of their game. So I agree with you. I think if you put up the numbers, you certainly get moved to the front of the line. But Jason Witten is always that interesting part of the conversation, because he's not a monster numbers guy, but at the same
right.
time, he's still very productive. He's a good blocker. And sometimes those guys get noticed strictly because of their name and their recognition.
Well, I think the second thing that sends guys to the Pro Bowl very often is how well they perform in the nationally televised games. And you will take note that guys who make spectacular plays or put up big time stats in the national telecasts, the primetime games in particular, and of course the Giants have their share of those this year. If Ingram should have a couple of 60-yard touchdown catches,
oh, it's going to help his stock.
You know, all of a sudden he's going to start getting some notice in that conversation.
Well, I think about what it did for Landon Collins this past season.
Yeah.
When he
put Janoris Jenkins,
another one. That's why they got heavy consideration because
not
right.
that they didn't have great seasons,
no, but
they deserved it.
It helps,
but it helped
because the national media is
no doubt about it
focuses on that game. So I think that's well stated. But just continue to go through the NFC just real quickly. You have Jason Witten, you have Zach Ertz, who's not necessarily a Pro Bowl guy in terms of monster numbers,
right.
but name recognition.
He's not.
Jordan Reed is a Pro Bowler. Can he stay healthy though? That's the big question. With
never
him.
Know.
The Lions have Eric Ebron. Can he stay healthy? Eric Ebron's capable of putting up numbers.
He is.
He hasn't been able to stay healthy.
He is.
Green Bay brought in Martellus Bennett. Martellus Bennett, I think, is also capable of making a Pro Bowl, especially in that offense.
Yes.
I mean, look at what Jared Cook did for the Packers last season, so you can't overlook it.
I think of the names you've mentioned so far, he would be my pick.
In terms of a Pro Bowl selection.
Best chance to be a Pro Bowl player.
More so than Jordan Reed, though.
See, I do.
Wow, I'm a little bit
surprised Bennett, I think,
that.
Is more durable.
And I agree
I
with
just
you
don't
there.
Trust Jordan but, Reed's ability to stay on the field.
Well, I don't trust it, but I still would consider him having a good chance of making the Pro Bowl. Because remember, we're also going under ideal conditions. If you're going to say Evan Ingram's making the Pro Bowl, then you have to operate under ideal conditions.
Well, and the other thing is, too, as we all know, the Pro Bowl guys also tend to come from contending teams.
How your team
and that,
does,
and yeah. that's another thing, too. So, you know, if you think the Giants are going to contend, that would help Ingram's chances as
Correct.
Well.
But we also, I think we've said multiple times that we think this is going to be a very tough
division. Tough division.
Race.
Tough
so
division.
I don't know if I'd eliminate any teams out of contention. So Jordan Reed, I
That's
still
true.
Think, is fair there. You figure the Packers are going to be in contention. They've been fairly
yep.
consistent. So I think that helps Martellus Bennett's cause. Kyle Rudolph for the Vikings. We're still waiting for that breakout season
he's
for
a,
Kyle Rudolph.
He's a
solid
good player.
But not necessarily an over-the-top guy.
No.
Then Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen, you have to take it into
consideration. No doubt.
I mean, he's up there with Martellus Bennett. Jimmy Graham for the Seahawks. We're still waiting for him to put up the numbers that he did in New Orleans. He
yeah.
hasn't done that necessarily.
Well, he doesn't have Breeze throwing it to him anymore.
yeah. But here's an intriguing team to look at. What about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? You know, if you want to say Evan Ingram, what about O.J. Howard?
Yeah.
And what about, and maybe this is a stretch, I was impressed by his play this season. I think he's overlooked in the tight end conversation. They have another very good tight end in Cameron Brate. Out of
mm-hmm.
Harvard,
mm-hmm.
who was very productive. You go back and look at his numbers. So I guess the reason why I'm doing this, the more and more you look at this division, Paul, there's substance there. There is substance there.
Okay.
I don't
so you think it is a long shot, so
well,
therefore it is
not,
a good bold prediction
not
for
not
you.
Not a long shot, but certainly I'm sort of in the in-between. I think on one side you could say that Ingram doesn't have an easy path. On the opposite side you could say that if the trends hold true, which is – meaning Jordan Reed gets hurt, Jason mm-hmm. Witten doesn't put good up numbers, then I mm-hmm. think Ingram's got a great path to perhaps
okay.
making a case for the Pro Bowl.
All right. Do you have any of your own before I give the fans
well,
mine?
Well, this was one that I wrote on Giants.com, so it's no secret, but this was mainly because I was forced to select somebody since these other players were already taken, and the question was, who do you think is next to make the Pro Bowl on this Giants roster? Mm-hmm. I could not take Damon Harrison because he was already taken by another individual, so keep that in mind. So I was trying to think outside the box, and I said that if everything is ideal, and this is almost in line with Evan Ingram, stays healthy, and perhaps benefits from the players around him and continues what he did in college, Darian Thompson maybe making the Pro Bowl would be my bold prediction.
And I think that qualifies because this is a guy who basically is a rookie. I mean, discount the first couple games he played last year.
It doesn't
mean anything.
Of course.
So he's basically a rookie, and all of a sudden, wow, if he's that good and makes that much of an immediate impact, I think a lot of people are going to be shaking their heads and saying, holy smokes. So, I mean – we think he's going to be good, but Pro Bowl good? I'd say that's a bold prediction.
Yeah, so that's going to be the one that I'm going to stick to.
I'm with that.
Bold prediction.
I got two folks, and I really had a problem trying to pick which one. I bounced them off Lance before the show because, again, what qualifies as bold? I originally thought bold prediction number one, Davis Webb will take snaps during the course of this regular season.
Now, Giants fans are cringing right now when they hear that, so – hopefully you'll clarify that.
To clarify, if the Giants should get into a laugher either way, and we know that does not happen very often, but I think that in the fourth quarter of a game, should the game be out of hand, either way, there's really nothing to be gained by taking out Eli, even if they're trying to conserve him, and replacing him with the backup quarterback. Because if the game is out of hand, what's the point? Get Davis Webb, your third-string quarterback, some experience, some snaps. Just give him a little tablespoon of a taste of what the NFL is. So I'd say bold prediction number one is that Davis Webb takes some regular season snaps for the Giants this year under those circumstances.
Of course.
And then I said, well, does that really qualify as bold? I don't know that that's that much of a huge long shot, but you thought it was. So you were going to let me have that one.
I was going to let you have it. I mean, I think most people would say, yeah, you figure a team's going to have a number of games that are lopsided, so it wouldn't be a surprise to see a quarterback. But
except the Giants don't have those kinds of
correct,
games.
Correct, they don't have those games. But the reason why I think it's bold, and I explained this to you off the air, I'm expecting that Davis Webb's going to be the third-string quarterback. And
so
I think you agree. So when you say lopsided games, I would think, well, if they want to take Eli out, perhaps they'd give maybe a rep to Josh Johnson or Geno Smith, whoever wins the backup job, before they go to Davis Webb. Because the reason I say that, remember, as much as Davis Webb, it's important to get him reps, Paul, Geno Smith's still very young, too. People forget that. Geno Smith is a young quarterback who is also still developing.
You're assuming he's making the team.
I am assuming.
I'm not.
And you're entitled to disagree. It's far from a lock, but if I go with my preface that I think that he does win the backup job, I think that there's meaning to give him some reps too, since he is still developing and he's a young quarterback.
I would go with Davis Webb in a situation that I just explained.
Even if Geno is still on
the don't care which one of the backup quarterbacks is number two, even though Davis Webb is number three, I would give him some reps in that situation, and I would still keep him as the number three guy. Just because he gets some reps doesn't mean he's elevated to number two.
Understandable.
Right. So given that, I kind of said, okay, Lance, I don't know if that's going to qualify or not. So I did think up another one, and this one's on defense. Olivier Vernon will be the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Now, how do I come up with that? I think the Giants will have a top five defense once again. I don't think that's too much to ask. And I think they've got so many good guys on defense. Okay, that I have such a feeling about Olivier Vernon having a monster season, because last year he played hurt for a lot of the year. Yeah. He got hurt in the Dallas game, and that wrist bugged him at least for two-thirds of the season. And even when he got, quote, healthy for the final month or so, he never really was 150%. I think he's coming in as a man on a mission. He's got tremendous pride. I saw it last year. He did not want to just take that contract and accept it as being the highest paid defensive player at the time when he signed it. He wanted to prove to everybody that he was worth every penny of it. And he wanted to put up like a 16 sack monster season. That's what was in his heart.
Yeah.
I know it. I've talked to the guy.
And he's capable of doing it.
I think he is. And so I'm going with Olivier Vernon as the NFL's Defensive Player of the Year. I will say that's a bold prediction for me on defense.
I would agree with you.
Davis Webb on offense.
I think that the Olivier Vernon Defensive Player of the Year is a really nice, bold prediction. I'm just looking up historically. Last Giant to win that award was Strahan in 2001. And then also, this is why I think it's challenging. I mean, remember, J.J. Watt won NFL Defensive Player of the Year three of the last 5 years. It hasn't been quite difficult for somebody to repeat. And part of this is name recognition and
sure,
the numbers he puts up. Khalil Mack won it last year, and then Luke Kuechly won it one of those other 5 years that J.J. Watt didn't win, just to, you know, give you some perspective there. Now, Mack is more of a end-slash-linebacker, depending on what you consider him and how he lines up with the Raiders, and Kuechly's a linebacker.
Well, let's not forget, Vernon would have to bypass Landon Collins, who was a finalist
correct
for the award
that's
last
another
year.
Good point, of course. Yeah, Collins. No, well, that's why I don't think it's a stretch. Listen, Collins was a big part of this defense that you talked about, which is well-versed and talented all around, so the defense got recognition for some of its individual performances. Janoris Jenkins, because of the Pro Bowl. I don't think it's a stretch to say Giants individual players are going to get some recognition or at least be in the conversation. The ultimate question is, can they surpass, like you said, the other batch of named stars in the NFL to actually ultimately win the award?
If I'm not mistaken, and I have to go back, and I did not check the numbers this morning as I was coming up with this bold prediction, I believe Olivier Vernon finished in the top five in the NFL last season, with quarterback pressures and sacks combined.
Okay.
He only had single digits in sacks, but pressures and sacks combined. He was a major, major pass rushing force and an impact player. And I'll be honest with you, I was a little surprised he didn't get much more support for some offseason awards. But this is a guy who I still think has a tremendous upside and a much higher ceiling than what we even saw last year.
Well, if you take that into consideration.
Plays the run really well, too.
Well, and that can't be overlooked as well. Same thing with JPP. Nobody really ever throws that into the mix, that he's actually a good run stopper. They're always fascinated with how many sacks and everything else come into play. But if the criteria, part of that is quarterback hurries and things that they do that don't always show up in the box score, Paul, then I think that helps the cause of a player like Olivier Vernon. But you just, you know what, you never know. It's not as if they get these writers and everybody together and say, you know, what put this player over the top for you and why did you give him the edge in the vote? You never really hear that. So you don't know. You don't know if they just look at the sack column and they're like, all right, I'm going to call it a day.
And by the way, I had no problem with Mac winning it last
year. No, he was very worthy of winning the award, no doubt.
I'd be honest with you, I thought he was going to get it. I was so happy for Landon Collins to be amongst the finalists. But I looked at it and I said, okay, Khalil Mack, I get it.
Well,
that's fine.
Mack is a good run stopper. I mean, he's a versatile player.
He's very good.
Yeah, he's not just a sack guy, too. I think, though, what was important for Landon Collins and why I think it was nice that he got nationally recognized is the fact that, first of all, the development that we've seen in a very short period of time deserved to be noted, not just amongst Giants Nation, but the rest of the league should say,
tremendous strides.
Here's a guy that was very up and down as a rookie and then really flourished. Number two, as a safety, just like any other position as a defensive end, you tend to judge that player based on one thing or one facet. For example, when you look at a defensive end, you probably jump to sacks all the time. I think that's fair, right? When you try to judge a safety, is it fair to say that tackles is probably one of the first things that comes to mind, Paul?
I think tackles and picks are the two things that everybody thinks about.
Okay, but so the reason why I throw that out is, but when you look at what Landon Collins did last season, he did a little bit of everything. It wasn't just the tackles. It wasn't just the interceptions. It was the game-changing plays. It was the energy. It was the leadership. It was being in the right place at the right time, being opportunistic. To simplify his performance last year and just go by one statistical category, I don't think that's doing justice for his game.
Lance, I'm going to tell you, as far as my eyes are concerned, he was the best Giants safety since Spider Lockhart back in the day.
Oh, you're going back, yeah.
Well, all right, I'm going to say it. Late 60s, early 70s, folks. He was, truthfully, the best Giant safety since Spider Lockhart. Now, Kenny Phillips was on his way to being that good.
Got hurt.
And then his knee went out. Okay? He was on his way. Kenny Phillips was going to be a Pro Bowl player. There's no question in my mind about that. Terry Kinnard was a Pro Bowl player before he went to Houston at the very end of his career for the Giants. But Landon Collins was downright spectacular last season.
I'm surprised, though, that what about Antrell Roll? You wouldn't at least maybe throw him in the conversation? We're talking about Giants, Paul.
I'm a big Antrell Roll fan, okay? But even in his Pro Bowl season, I think even Trell would tell you that all-around impact, Collins was so forceful against the run. Trell could cover guys in the slot. He could ball hawk. He certainly helped set the defense. He did so many other things well and some things better than Landon Collins. But Collins last year put together not only the interception numbers and the turnover numbers, but his run stopping, playing in the box. He was a major, major force on the NFL's most dominant run stuffing team. I can't say that he belongs behind Antrell Roll.
Well, I'm not saying behind. I guess my point was that I think Roll deserves consideration in the
conversation. Sure, he does. Absolutely deserves consideration.
And maybe saying that prior to Collins, I don't think it's a stretch to say Roll put together the most recent impressive individual performance by a safety.
Well, again,
who wore a Giants
he made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, but it's not
Terry
just
Kinnard made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that, you know, I remember Spider Lockhart, and he played for some really, really ragged teams. A couple of decent ones, too, but some ragged teams. And Spider was all over the field. I mean, he was smart. He was a very well-liked teammate. He played the run despite the fact that he had a small frame. That's why they called him Spider. He had a small frame and he was wiry. I don't think he had an ounce of muscle or fat on his body. He was just skin and bones. And he would come up and he'd crack people. And he'd also pick off balls. He was a ball hawk, too. So, for that reason, I think Spider did more for the Giants' defense when he played. And he made, I think, three or four Pro Bowls himself. He did more for the Giants' defense than what Trell was asked to do for his Giants' defense when they won the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just my take on it.
I'm just looking at, I just wanted to refresh my memory. Antrell Roll, the 2013 season was the season he made the Pro Bowl for the Giants. He had led the team in tackles that year, just like Landon Collins. He had six interceptions, which was also a team high in that category. He had two sacks, and Collins also had a few sacks last season. Fumble recovery, a forced fumble. The reason why the 2013 season jumped out to me, he filled up the stat sheet, just like Landon Collins did. Collins gave you a little bit of everything last season.
Yeah, but the 13 season was not a...
No, it wasn't a good season overall.
No, it was a horrible season.
But see, that my point is, Paul, I think what Roll accomplished under the circumstances, because he didn't have nearly as much talent around him,
see,
you can't overlook that. That's
and of course,
that
falls into the
at.
Spider argument because he played on some very weak teams.
Well, if you're doing that individually, and
but
you
if, you
have
could,
a lot of
if
talent
you can put up
you.
A superhuman season on a team that made the playoffs, that even says a lot because now you stood out amongst a bunch of other players who were also standing out.
And I think that's just as fair of a point. I just think that it's easy to overlook a guy.
I don't want to disparage Antrell Roll. I love Antrell Roll.
No, I wasn't accusing
him. He should be in the conversation, and I'm sorry. I don't mean to slight him.
You don't have to apologize.
I'm nostalgic about Spider, though. You understand. Carl Lockhart was a special guy for me.
Anybody.
Number 43. He was a special guy.
Anybody old school. Come on. You're an old school guy. You can't lose your reputation here. Trenches.
You didn't really expect me to just go back to 1990,
no,
did you?
No, that's why I was glad that you went to the historical archives. I just wanted to make sure that the recent archives weren't overlooked. That's all. You got to sometimes dust off
no disrespect
pages.
Intended to, yes. And no disrespect intended, quite frankly, to Deion Grant, who was a significant member of the 2007 Giants Super Bowl team. Please, no disrespect to him. He played extremely well that year.
So let's open up the phone lines. Bold predictions is part of the conversation today. If you have some bold predictions for this team, feel free to throw them out. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Shreyas in Massachusetts. Shreyas, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance and Paul? And I love the conversation you guys were having prior to taking this call. And so I just want to chime in a little bit into the whole Landon Collins argument, Landon Collins versus, let's see, Antrell Roll.
Sure.
I absolutely loved what Paul said about this because here's the thing. In a stats world that we live in, all tackles aren't the same, just like all completions aren't the same. Every tackle has a different meaning to it, which gets lost when you translate it into stats. That's why you have to look at and analyze what went into those tackles. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, when Landon Collins tackled, it was either limiting yards after reception, or it was limiting big plays. Landon Collins was essentially such an incredible force. He limited those screens that you see that break the bank, go for 100 yards. He limited those to 2 to 4 yards repeatedly over and over again. It's such amazing to see it on film, and especially the cornerbacks. I mean, the cornerbacks were amazing on limiting the screens, but Landon Collins, any intermediate pass, you could guarantee it would not go for more than the point where the receiver caught the ball because Landon Collins was there to stop him. That is such an important facet of a defense, and every great defense has to have that one guy who enforces, as Paul said, who enforces the rules and does not allow yards after carry, because I mean yards after catch, because those are the things that kill a defense. And Landon Collins was the antidote for that. So he was, without a doubt, one of the most important pieces on our defense. And I want to bring up Olivier Vernon, because according to Pro Football Focus, which, again, it doesn't rely on its own on the given stats, it actually comes up with its own stats, and sometimes that's helpful to, you know, distinguish some things.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Olivier Vernon was second in the league in quarterback in pressures behind Khalil Mack. He is a force. But given that he played the league-high snaps, so what we want to do going into next year, here's my bold prediction. If Shane Vereen, Evan Engram, Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, and Brandon Marshall are all healthy, the Giants will be a top-five offense, right? It's not really bold, but I mean, there'll be a top-five offense.
After what they did last year, that's a bold prediction.
Okay, all right.
Considering the points, yeah.
All right. Because the role that Shane Vereen plays in that offense is so underrated. Because Shane Vereen was the key reason why the Giants struggled on offense last year. Like, I know it sounds absurd.
It was a very big deal.
He played a role.
The second that he went out of the lineup, you know, I said that it was going to be a huge loss, and it was. And then I kept pointing to the fact that when he comes back, they'll be better. And then he got hurt again. It was dreadful.
I mean, it was dreadful. Yeah, exactly. Stats don't show the role that a player plays in an offense most of the time. Because what Evan Engram does is he breaks the cover too. That's not shown by stats.
There's a lot of things
show.
In sports.
They can show how much yards Odell Beckham has.
Especially in football. Especially in football. Stats tell you less about pro football than they do other sports. Truthfully.
Exactly.
And so I would add one other thing to what you just said a minute ago about Olivier Vernon. If I may just say this. Yes, about the pressures and the sacks. I mentioned that earlier about Vernon being very high on the charts. Understand this. He played like 95% of the Giant snaps.
Exactly.
Now, and he did it with basically a bum wrist. Now, think about this.
Right.
If he's healthy, and I know he's motivated, okay, now maybe he plays 12 less snaps a game. How much more juice is going to be in his tank? How much more ferocity will he have on every single pass rush if they're able to give him a few snaps off so that he's not gassed in the fourth quarter of how many games?
That is a great point. That is a great point. And not just that, but imagine our offense actually leading the game most of the time, right? Imagine our offense actually winning the game.
If the offense can,
and the other offense has to now
absolutely
go more.
The other team's in pass mode. Sure. Anyway, good stuff. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Trey. Thanks so much.
Really fun call. A lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you look at Vernon last season, there's a lot of things that probably didn't necessarily always show up in the box score because, especially as you mentioned, Paul, you know, he didn't have a monster sack season in terms of totals, but despite the injury, despite the physical limitations, was still very effective.
He was an impact player.
You always saw that his presence was felt. Even if he wasn't bringing the quarterback down, he was in the vicinity, he was in the hunt, and he was a big reason why the Giants were effective in stopping the run, which to me is where you start and end the conversation, as far as I'm concerned, before you even get enamored with sacks. You got to stop the run.
Well, think about this, Lance, for just one second. I know we want to get to these other phone calls. If the Giants' defense was, you know, top shelf last year, and I'm telling you, I believe that there's going to be improvement out of Vernon this year. I think JPP is going to have a better year, too. Remember, he missed the final month of the season.
Yep.
And I think if you reduce some of his snaps, I think he'll have more gas in his tank as well. Okay, so hopefully Taylor and Okwara and these other guys can help him out with some of those blows. I think both defensive ends are going to be more effective. Okay, we believe that Landon Collins is not going to take a step back. He'll be at least as good as he was last year. We know what the corners are, and Eli Apple should only get better, right? We think Darian Thompson is going to be an upgrade, we think, over Andrew Adams, who certainly played well.
And you still have Adams in the mix if you need it.
Still in the mix if you need him.
You've already witnessed what he's done.
And you know what? We think that B.J. Goodson's going to be a pretty good early down run stopper. We think. We don't know that. But Where's the potential downgrade? This defense should be at least as good, if not better, this year. I think that's why I keep saying I don't get the Giants being 20-1 for the Super Bowl. I think this defense is going to be better.
Oh, I think you make a strong case that the continuity is there, that factor.
Well, certainly the fact that two guys may be out of the starting lineup from last season.
The nucleus is returning, and the young guys who flourished last season now have a full season under their belt.
Yeah.
And they're only going to be building upon that. The only thing that I would throw out
is... You don't know about Tomlinson compared to Hankins. Is that what you're going to tell me?
That's exactly what I was going to get to. Because Hankins is a guy that's been in the mix of this defense.
Good player.
And a solid player. And he's another player to me that you look at the numbers and that doesn't tell at all.
I agree with that.
You have to watch him play to play, what he brought to the table. And, you know, that's a noticeable void if you don't get similar level of production. And I'm even
they think they have a facsimile, though.
And I'm not doubting that. And I think that Tomlinson's going to have an excellent opportunity to make a statement. I've said this all offseason. I'm going to stand by this. I still think Robert Thomas has a very good shot of being the starter. And I wouldn't pencil in Tomlinson and just assume that all of the other guys are out of the mix. Robert Thomas... Spags has talked very highly of him this offseason. He's been very impressed with his work ethic. Remember, when he joined the team last year, he was dealing with the illness, so we didn't see a lot of him. But I think they're very impressed with how many strides he's made, so it's important to continue to focus on him in addition to Tomlinson and not just have it a one-sided conversation. So when you take all that into consideration, yes, Paul, I think they have some options. But whenever you take a proven commodity out of the lineup and replace it with at least a little bit of unknown, it's fair for, I think, some people to question that. I don't think they're going out of their way just to find to poke holes in the Giants' defense.
That's fine.
Let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Ike is in Boston. Ike, what's happening?
Hey, it's Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sorry about that, Mike.
Right, hello.
We lost a syllable. Lost a letter on the way. So how's everything,
sure,
Mike?
No problem.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. So real quick, I'll give my bold prediction at the end, but I wanted to touch on a few things, and I'll bring it all back to that. Just looking at the schedule, I haven't had a chance to really call and talk about it. And, you know, my thought on the current schedule is that we're going to be fighting an uphill battle the whole way. I know there are some things that look favorable, but at the same time, I hate the fact that we're playing four teams coming off their bye week and then Dallas coming off of a 10-day rest. And it seems like last year the same thing happened. And I know, you know, some other fans have voiced that the Giants seem to be this forgotten team sometimes. And I see a lot of that, too, in the media, where my thought process on it is I'm 34. And growing up, you know, the Cowboys were a very hot team in the 90s. And even living in New York, you know, I lived in New York at the time, there were kids in school who you know, were all Dallas fans. And I understand that they have a large following across the country, and a lot of the people, I guess, in the media now even and you know, in high levels in you know, the NFL are Cowboys fans, you know, and it just seems like they get a lot of, I don't know if I would say it's purposeful or, you know, whatever the case may be, but there's a lot more that's promoted towards them is my feeling on it.
Well, just and hold I, on half like, a second before you go to your next point, though. The fan situation – you know, doesn't necessarily go to the Vegas prognosticators because they're dealing with numbers and they're taking their bets and their lines very seriously because they're millions and millions and millions of dollars relying on their betting charts. And when they say Dallas is 8-1 to win the Super Bowl and the Giants are 20-1, I'm looking at that and I'm just not understanding their mathematics. That to me has nothing to do with fans.
That doesn't bother me at all. What bothers me a little bit is I feel year after year, and I have, living in Boston here, I have a lot of friends who are Patriots fans and different things. And, you know, I was going over the schedule last year, and I'm not looking to find things to pick at, but there were so many advantages for Dallas last year and this year again. And I can't help but wonder, there are so many algorithms that they run when they put, you know, there's going to be advantages and disadvantages for each team. But
no doubt.
It just seems like Dallas ends up on top every time. And I can't help but wonder if there's a little bit of bias. Like I said, you know, the fan base tends to be, you know, late 30s, early 40s is really that's a strong fan base for Dallas. I don't think a lot of the younger kids, it's not nationwide, I wouldn't say, at this point, you know, just because they haven't been that great in the last 20 years. But,
you know that what I want you to do? Go to Twitter. Do you have Twitter?
I don't.
You don't. All right. I wonder if it's anywhere else. NFL Operations. It's at NFL Operations. They just moved an explanatory story about all the details about how the schedule is put together. And I really would love to see every fan read that, because for every fan that has an opinion like you do that Dallas is getting a break, I'd love for you guys to read this, because there is so much that goes into the schedule. And the last thing, in fact, it's not even on the list, is favoritism for a given team. It just does not exist. It really doesn't. Trust me.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe I'm reading too much into it. I'm not sold on it. You know, I just kind of, the last couple of years have been tough for the Giants. But at the end of the day, you play the schedule that you have.
Of course.
You know, and sometimes, you know, the Giants come in with a mediocre record and beat an undefeated team in the Super Bowl. And that's where my bold prediction is going to come in. I'd love to see the Giants win the division, go 12-4 or 11-5, win the division, fight that uphill battle, and go in. And, you know, living here in Boston, we moved, my wife and I, about 2 years ago. And, you know, we have a lot of family who are Patriots fans. So I've gone to quite a few Patriots games. I was at the Deflategate and so forth. The attitude, though, lately kind of drives me a little bit crazy, where there's such a strong animosity towards the Giants. And it's gotten me to the point where I have a hard time rooting for them at this point. And especially after seeing that interview with Brandon Marshall, there's just so many things with that. Here's my prediction. I would love to see the Patriots go undefeated, meet the Giants in the Super Bowl, and I'd love to see the Giants rip their heart out just one more time.
Okay.
That is quite a prediction, Mike. We'll leave it at that. Appreciate the phone call.
Maybe it's wishful thinking, but that's what I'd love to see.
Okay.
Understandable. I think it's understandable also that he would say that, considering he is right in the middle of Patriots country and he's a Giants fan. So he's probably friends and associates with a number of the New England faithful.
He's got to dig out from a Patriots mudslide every morning.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, when you're in enemy territory, though I don't really look at his enemy territory, because he's not in division territory. Patriots are in the AFC. Maybe more of a Super Bowl rival territory. You know, if you're in the middle of Dallas and you're a Giants fan, I understand. If you're in the middle of Philadelphia and you're a Giants fan, or you're in the D.C., Virginia area, I get that. That, I think, is a little bit different than being a Giants fan in Patriots territory. All right, let's head back to the lines. Jeff is in Wisconsin. Jeff, what's happening?
How you doing, boys?
Doing all right, Jeff. What do you got for us?
I'm sorry to keep talking about Dallas, because I know what phone line I called, but I'm just wondering how you guys feel about the whole, like, Zeke possible suspension thing, whether anything's going to come of that, and how it affects that week one matchup, mainly for the fans, because, I don't know, I like to see the best game that I can, but if it helps us win, I don't know, either way. What do you guys think?
Well, we've talked about this a lot over the last few days, because it's been on the minds of a number of fans, Jeff, so you're not alone. As far as suspension, I mean, at this point, it's pure speculation. I always say this, let the full details come out about any player. And the same thing should hold true for if a Giant was, God forbid, involved in any off-the-field issues. You got to let the details play out, and you have to let the NFL do its job before we, as a society, and the court of public opinion loves to jump the gun and decipher whether or not somebody's guilty or not guilty, when we really don't know about a number of the facts. So I still am unsure about exactly what took place in a lot of these events. So let's see how that plays out before we rush to say that this is how it should have been handled. If we go, though, under the assumption, Jeff, which is what you're alluding to, so we'll go with your hypothetical, and let's say Zeke does miss a game or two and he's not suiting up for week one. As I've said multiple times on this program, I'll continue to emphasize it, the Cowboys have a lot of experience in the backfield behind Ezekiel Elliott, and I think that gets overlooked because of the fact that he was their workhorse last year. But Darren McFadden is still there. Alfred Morris is still there. Morris has starting experience with Washington. McFadden's got starting experience with Oakland, and also was the Cowboys starter in 2015 when Zeke wasn't even there, and they had issues with Tony Romo and his health, and he ran for over 1,000 yards. And McFadden is also somebody that also, I think, can catch the football and provide some danger. And I think it was Charlie in Portland, Maine. I can't believe we're giving credit to Charlie on this program, but I have to, who actually brought up a real good point. And he said that if McFadden did start in place of Elliott, he thought that that actually is a bigger problem for the Giants, because you don't know necessarily how they'd utilize McFadden, whereas Elliott is much more of a ground-and-pound type of back. And I think that's a very good point.
It's a valid point, and I do think that, you know, the one thing I would say about this whole Dallas thing, look, when they were America's team way back when, there's no question that there was a bias and I'm not coming out of the NFL office or the schedule makers. Please don't go there. But there was a bias amongst a lot of media and amongst a lot of fans to tip their cap to America's team whenever possible. Of course, they got a ton of national television exposure, and they were winning, and a lot of young folks were growing up, and they were rooting for the Cowboys and all that stuff. And I get that. I get that. But then they fell on a lot of years of hard times. I mean, look, they got mold on their Super Bowl banners up at Jerry Jones's place. I mean, it's you know, whatever. And so now in two of the last 3 years, they've won double digits. And so some of those folks are kind of resuscitating their love for the Cowboys again. And then you have another group of youngsters, who young fans, who are, again, they're kind of gravitating as front runners, seeing a team that's doing well. But that's really no different than when any other terrific team kind of has a run. The Steelers and the Steel Curtain had their guys. The Miami Dolphins in the early 70s had their group of front runners. So did the 49ers in the 80s. I mean, even the Bears in the 46 defense, they were a national phenomenon. There's always going to be a slant, and I know I'm a little bit off the topic here, but there's always going to be a slant and a bias among the national media for, I don't want to say the hot team, but maybe that is the appropriate word, because the fans seem to gravitate toward them, and the media is like, okay, well, we want to be popular with the fans, so we're going to gravitate toward them too. I see that a lot. It happens.
But let me just clarify or get a clarification from you, Paul. When you say a bias, are we talking about in terms of favoritism and upside for the team, or bias meaning too critical of that team because of the national recognition?
No, I think that there's favoritism in that opinions are not as detailed and as analytical. When you have a team that is in that's favored in the bias, what you'll get are national media people who just, oh yeah, Dak Prescott's fine. Dak Prescott was a Pro Bowl quarterback. They're not going to take the time to necessarily say, well, why might he not be that good this year? How might he take a step back? They're just automatically going to mail it in and say, they got Prescott, they got Elliott, those guys are great, they're going to be great again. That's what happens when there's a bias. When there's a bias towards favoritism of a team, the national media in general just tends to chalk up the optimistic point of view as a given. They assume the optimistic point of view is going to be a fact again. They're not willing to break down the fact that, guess what? It may not be true this year. That team may, or that player may, take steps back. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. No, I just was curious what you were going with, only because I will say this, and I don't want to get off topic, but it's connected to the Ezekiel Elliott. And by the way, Jeff, we didn't mean to let you go too early. I hope you didn't have anything additional to say, but do appreciate the question, was the fact that I think the media has been very critical of a lot of the off-the-field behavior
that
by
is
members
true.
Of the Cowboys this offseason. And that's why I questioned what you were going with, because I think that the media actually has not given a lot of these players the benefit of the doubt, and they've grouped and they said, this team's got major issues, there's a track record, there's a trend there, we're not just going to wait to see the facts play.
No, because I think more people are picking the Cowboys to win this division than any other team in the East, and certainly Vegas feels that way. So despite the fact that all of their off-the-field stuff has been picked apart, because let's face it, media also seems to like negative stories whenever they can get their hands on it.
Yeah.
They're still picking Dallas on the field.
Well, so your point being that despite the criticism, it hasn't impacted the media's outlook from an X's and O's standpoint.
Correct.
How well they're doing. But I would say that I think they're still looking at this team extremely critically off the field. If you separate
absolutely,
the two. And I don't think there's any bias shown by the media, because if anything, the Cowboys are providing a field day content-wise this offseason with what they've been dealing with
off the field, though.
Yes,
when people talk about on-field performance, they're still gloating about how the Cowboys are going to win this division this year.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I see multiple reasons why they will not.
Well, and getting back to the caller's last question, I mean, if you want to know, though, specifically how perhaps the loss of him will impact the team, I think it goes back to what we suggested with Morris and McFadden. And I've used, Paul, the reason why I've said that I don't think there's going to be an immense drop-off, at least if Elliott did miss time, and I know you and I have had conversations like this, is because I'm going by an X's and O's track record.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pointing to other running backs that have had success in the system, and I'm also pointing to the offensive line, and I understand people are going to argue there's some movable pieces this season. I get that, but for the most part, even with some movable pieces in previous seasons, there's been continuity and stability on the O-line that I think puts them in a good position to still have success even if they lost their starting running back. And you can't overlook that because I've referenced Pittsburgh when Le'Veon Bell was suspended, mm-hmm. D'Angelo Williams stepped in and they were okay. Denver, we talked about under Mike Shanahan, year after year, a new running back, and they did okay. So I'm not just throwing this out there randomly because it's the Cowboys. I'm looking at over the course of NFL history, teams that have good running games, good offensive lines, they've lost personnel, they've still been okay. That's why I have no reason to think that perhaps the loss of Elliott is going to change that narrative.
I think there'll still be an offense to be reckoned with, even if Elliott misses some games, but I do think it will have a little bit more of an impact than you do. I want to mention that Peter King of SmithsEye.com, Sports Illustrated, the outstanding NFL writer, he wrote a breakdown on how the 2017 NFL schedule was made, and that is on SI.com. And the article came out on April the 21st. So go to SI.com and research that story. Please, if you have any thoughts about the NFL schedule, if you like it, you don't like it, you think there's some prejudice going on, you think certain things aren't fair, do yourself a favor. Read the Peter King article because he gets into so much detail as to how they have to get this thing done and all of the different roads and hurdles and detours and minefields that they go through to try to put this sucker together. It's a great story. It's fascinating. And I think after reading it, you'll understand that bias has no place in that conversation.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Don is on the line. He is in Tennessee. Don, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, Lance.
Hi.
How are you all today?
Doing well,
great.
Don.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. You know, over the last several days, I think following you and also reading the articles on the website, I've been looking at Evan Engram and, you know, the player he is. But I also have a concern. And maybe you guys can kind of bring me towards a better conclusion. My thought process being when Rhett Ellison is in the game, our defense is not really going to load up looking for more of a running game than a potential passing game because based on what I'm seeing, I don't see Engram as a really strong blocker. So I'd appreciate your thoughts on that.
Well, we're going to have to see. I mean, what we know is this. He seems to have the desire, the energy, and the wherewithal, the frame, the physical tools to succeed at this level. We think so. We don't know it yet. And I'm going to be fair about this because you guys know going into the draft, I was in favor of Njoku because I thought he showed to be a better blocker in college than Engram did. I'm not backing off of that. I'm not backing off of that. I still think that's true. However, what the Giants are hoping is that all the characteristics that Engram has shown will translate to him being a better blocker when they ask him to, because he was not asked to do that at Ole Miss. And sometimes it's not fair to say the guy can't do it, and maybe I was unfair going into the draft to say, well, he can't do that. He wasn't asked to do it. Maybe now that they're asking him to do it and someone's going to teach him to do it, maybe he'll do it. And maybe he'll do it well.
Yeah.
What I will say is this. I said it yesterday. There's not a safety or a cornerback in the league that's going to want to go up against his frame if he's going to get into their grill. That's true. Now, I don't know about his ability to handle defensive ends and linebackers on a consistent basis at this level. He may get blown up, and that may not work out too well. But that's why they have Ellison here, because Ellison can handle those guys.
Yeah, Don, I would say that you've got the flexibility this season, and I don't think your concern is off-base. I mean, whenever a player who hasn't been asked to play that type of role in college is now going to make the transition to the NFL, and in order to get additional playing time is going to have to be aware of, you may have to take on a linebacker, you may have to take on a safety, even if within the framework of the play, your main concern is to be a receiver. There's going to be a transition part of that, and there is possibly going to be some ups and downs. But I think you could say that about most rookies who are asked to do things that they were not asked to do in college. I don't think he's going to be any different than that. But the reason why I wouldn't be overly concerned is the addition of Rhett Ellison and knowing that that is his main strength and knowing that he could be a fullback out of the backfield, he has no problem lining up as an extra offensive lineman, gives the Giants some flexibility where if they wanted to utilize two tight ends and play to Engram's strength as a receiver and not have to put a lot of the emphasis on blocking in year number one. At least you know you have Ellison to turn to, as well as perhaps some of these other guys that may make the roster, like a Matt Lacoste. Versatility, I think, is what strengthens this tight end group this year compared to maybe previous years.
Well, I think one of the things that I've looked at is the fact that I think the Giants really have one of the strongest pass-catching group that I've ever seen. Forgetting the fact they added Marshall, I think the new players are definitely going to be a strength for the Giants. And I'll take that question answer off the air. Thank
All right,
you.
Don, appreciate the phone call. Well, he's referring to the entire group as a whole, meaning the wide receivers, the tight ends. It's not just necessarily the pass-catching tight ends. I mean, is this the most impressive group we've seen? I think we even had that conversation once, Paul, on this show when we were asking about, is this Eli Manning's most talented, most impressive group? And I still don't think it's his most talented and impressive group, because I think that we tend to overlook what Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz and some of those other players brought to the table. But on paper, they're certainly not lacking weapons. I will tell you that. The addition of Brandon Marshall, not just as a pass catcher, but as a run blocker and somebody who adds height in the red zone, I think is a big boost. Shepard's already been in this offense, so we at least got a taste of what he could do. But Marshall, an upgrade over Victor Cruz, that certainly bodes well, very well for the Giants. Plus, you still have Beckham. You added Evan Engram. And then, you know, to me, and I know we alluded to this earlier, I mean, I think the addition of Shane Vereen, if he's fully healthy, as well as, you know, what Paul Perkins can do out of the backfield, makes the receiving core that much more dangerous, Paul. It's not so much – everybody focuses on the three wide receivers and perhaps who they're going to mix and match at tight end. Vereen can catch the ball out of the backfield. Perkins, who's run a number of screens last year, he could catch the ball out of the backfield. Those two guys, if they stay healthy, you know, if Eli just can dump it off and then they use the blocking up the field and they let those guys work in open space, you know, that to me is going to be a facet of this offense, which I don't think we really had a great chance of seeing last season.
You know, again, it's a spider web. That's what happens in the NFL. Everything impacts everything else. Nothing can be discussed in a bubble. So when you talk about the Giants' run game, well, guess what? It's the O-line. It's the tight ends. It's what can the receivers do to take guys out of the box. When you talk about the Giants' passing game, it's okay. Can they make people honest by pulling them up to try to defend the run, to open things up more? Can Engram open things up more for the guys on the outside? Will Marshall deflect some of the coverage away because they're going to be worried about him catching those tall skyscraping kind of passes? I mean, everything impacts everything else, which is exactly why, probably more than any other, as I said before, stats don't give you the full story in the NFL. And it's because everything is so intertwined. It is such a spider webs game. And you know, it just infuriates me when everybody wants to go to analytics because it's so easy to look at numbers and quantify the numbers when that only tells you a fraction of the story.
Bold predictions, big part of today's program. A number of you weighed in on Twitter. Let's read some of your bold predictions. Freddie at FreddieJ_23 writes, I know I'm going to get killed for this, but my bold prediction is that Eric Flowers will be on the edge of making the Pro Bowl this season. Okay, I would say that fits a bold prediction. I think that's a fair one.
That is a bold prediction.
Next one, Dre Day 2014 at D_Nice4Life. Well, he's got a few bold predictions, so we'll try to cover as many as we can here. Number one bold prediction is Giants will win the division by week 12. That is a hell of a bold prediction, considering how tight this division's been.
I think that would be for any team you picked in this East.
His second bold prediction, the Giants will have the most Pro Bowlers from all NFC teams. I don't know if that's as bold because, I mean, as we mentioned, the Giants have a lot of talent on defense and they have a lot of talent on offense. So, you know, they could very well have a lot of reps on the Pro Bowl roster if everything goes according to plan. And then his third one is Paul Perkins will lead all running backs in total yards from scrimmage. Every single running back in the league. Well, as I mentioned, I think he's got the ability.
The NFL?
Yeah. Said all running backs in total yards.
That's
Wait,
bold.
Well, you know what? Maybe I'm misinterpreting this. I don't know if he – I mean, I'm assuming he's meaning the entire league because it's not really that bold to say he's going to lead all the running backs on the team.
The league is bold.
Yeah, that is bold. All right, well, let's get one or two more in here. John at JMF8013. My bold prediction is Eli will lead quarterbacks in touchdowns thrown given how many weapons he has. So another prediction in terms of the entire league. Eli Manning is going to lead the NFL in passing touchdowns.
It's probably a little bit of a reach. I don't know that it's totally, totally a long shot. I mean, Eli's thrown in the 30s a couple times before.
He has.
It's not like he can't do that.
No, he's capable of it. I would say this about that bold prediction. I think that if Eli Manning leads the NFL...
That's bad for the Giants.
That's exactly what I was getting to. Remember, they had 11 rushing touchdowns in the last two seasons combined, the Giants. 5 and 6, respectively. That's it. 11. You want to see that number go up this season. As great as this offense is, you want to be able to punch the ball in on the ground. And Eli can work his magic to get them in the red zone, but ultimately, you want to be able to punch it in. So we certainly appreciate all the bold predictions. Keep sending them in. Hashtag Giants Chat. As we continue the conversation over into tomorrow's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, it'll be Jeff Fiegels and I. We'll continue to take plenty of questions and continue to set the stage for the start of training camp, as that'll wrap up the latest edition. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Menno. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.